Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markwitz, and I'm speaking today with Nick Hodge, founder and owner of Digest Publishing and publisher of Foundational Profits, which is more macro-focused, and Hodge Family Office, which is the more speculative newsletter that Nick puts out to investors just to show him what he's looking at in the markets. And Nick, it's always great to have you on the show just to get your thoughts on a range of different markets. And I guess today we can start with, since it is the end of the year, a kind of a look back at what 2022 themes have been and a look forward at 2023. And Nick, it really seems like the big story this year was bear market almost across the board, whether you're looking at the general equities, the crypto space, commodities. It's been a tough year, a tough slog for investors. And really the two asset classes that did great were the US dollar for most of the year, although that's rolled over recently, and interest rates have just surged for most of 2022. As you look forward into next year, do you see any of these macro trends changing?
I see a continued contraction in the economic cycle. I see an earnings recession that's going to materialize in earnest. You know, you mentioned the dollar has been strong. You mentioned interest rates. Everyone knows the stock market is down for the year. There's been pockets of bullishness if you look at energy stocks, for example. But as we go forward, even energy stocks, I think, are going to come off a bit. You've seen oil pull back now to $75 or $80 a barrel. And in the next couple of quarters, you know, those earnings are going to be compared against oil last March, you know, in the, a year ago, that was $100 or $120 a barrel. And so you still had positive earnings growth in the S&P in Q3. I think that heads closer to zero from the 3% it was last quarter. And I think you get a continued tightening environment. Everyone points to the Fed and a pivot. And I've been saying for a couple of months now that there is no pivot. I've made it part of, you know, public presentations I've given and have maintained that inflation remains sticky high, even though it's, you know, come off a bit. You're still at the 30 or 35 year high inflation with significantly elevated prices across many commodities. And I think the Fed views that in conjunction with still, you know, low unemployment, that, you know, their mandate is going to be to continue to tighten. And if not tighten, then certainly not loosen policy. So I think you get another couple of quarters here of rocky road, as it were. You know, you've got a yield curve that remains inverted, not only on the tens and twos, but on the like the tens and even the 3 month is inverted. And so, you know, that's called all of the last, I don't know, 10 or 12 recessions. And I think that's really going to materialize here in the next couple of quarters. So I see relative dollar strength. And I guess looking ahead, what I'm starting to see is a little bit less correlation among gold and the dollar. And the long end of the curve, the 10-year, you know, softening a bit, allowing gold to go up. We've seen over the past month or so gold go from the low 1600s to 1750, 1775 or so. And I think that's more indicative of a late stage recession, as you saw, you know, coming out of 2008, et cetera. So getting a bit more bullish on gold, but still very cautious in the overall indices.
Yeah, it's nice to see some of the correlation starting to break, because for a while we're joking that it seemed like one universal chart, that if the day was the dollar up and rates up, everything else was down and vice versa. Nice to see some of the asset classes starting to diverge a little bit. Hopefully we'll see more of that moving into 2023. But you brought up the theme of recession. And Nick, I'd like to get your thoughts on it. I don't think we've talked about this topic before, and that is stagflation. We hear a lot of people throw around a lot of terms: recession, depression, stagflation, but we do have high sticky inflation, as you mentioned. We do have high energy prices, although they have rolled off some. They're still higher than they were a year or two back. When you look at the growth, the GDP estimates have been coming in somewhat muted. You know, we had two negative quarters, we had a positive quarter, but if you stripped out some of the things like inventories, they were almost essentially flat for the year. So it's not breaking any records as far as growth. And we're finally starting to see some cracks in the surface with the job and labor markets. There are some conflicting reports where maybe there's good jobs, but rising unemployment. Do you think we're still in a stagflationary environment, or do you think that we've already kind of moved into mid-cycle recession, as you were outlining?
Well, there's stagflation, to be sure. I mean, you have relatively low growth, as you pointed out, and sticky high prices. I mean, that's the definition of stagflation, right? High prices and low growth. I think you've got to work through it for another two quarters, like I say. So this has been a weird recession, right? Because we sort of had like a flash recession in 2020 at the onset of the pandemic, and then a rip-roaring, you know, second half of 2020 and early 2021. you need more cracks in employment, and you're starting to see that in the tech space. You've seen earnings come off significantly in the tech space. You've seen some layoffs, whether you look at, Amazon laying off 10,000 people, or, Meta announcing they're laying off 13,000 people. And so I don't know what your definition of mid-cycle is. What I would say is that, we're going to have about a year-long malaise. And, if we just had 2 quarters of negative growth and a quarter of relatively no growth, I think you're in for another 2 quarters, like I say. So I saw that the Q3 GDP number was revised slightly higher to 2.9%. I think you get a similar number in the fourth quarter, if not a bit softer. And like I say, you still got earnings to work through, an earnings recession, quite frankly. We haven't seen negative earnings growth yet. And I think that's ahead when we start to get the Q4 numbers coming out in January for the S&P companies. And then you really got to have some sort of break in employment to put the bookend on a recession. It sort of affects, the wealth effect comes down, and then earnings are affected. Home prices, which we're certainly seeing, right? We've seen some of the fastest collapse in home prices ever, even faster than in 2008. And then you really got to get the layoffs and the unemployment higher before the recession comes to an end. So call it mid-cycle, I guess, if you're looking at 4 quarters of low or negative growth, you got two more ahead of you.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was indicating, is that we're kind of halfway through the recessionary slog with the second half to go. And I guess let's dig in a little bit more to the earnings recession idea. We've had a couple other guests bring this up, and we haven't really seen it yet. There were a lot of companies that were warning, when you think about what Walmart and Target were putting out just in Q2 and Q3, they were telling people to be careful of retail, and that started hitting other stocks like Macy's and Bed Bath & Beyond, et cetera. But when you look forward to Q4, we've just had the Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales. We've kicked off the retail season. Are you expecting Q4 to come in a little weaker? And when we roll the calendar over, when some of these earnings reports come in, are you expecting it to be a little more carnage for maybe that earnings recession you were mentioning?
Yes, I think that S&P earnings growth goes negative. I'm looking at the, I just pulled the numbers up in front of me. So you've got almost all 500 companies reporting for Q3 now, just about 490 of them. So let's call it all of them, because there's 500 companies in the S&P, and earnings growth was 3.4%, and most of that was buoyed by the energy sector, like I said. So, the comps are going to be really tough, is the thing that I look at. So in 2021, the year the stock market was hitting record highs day after day, and it was always buy the dip, those earnings last year in 2021 were being compared to lockdown numbers, right? Which were obviously abysmal because the economy was shut down by the government. So there was low growth, there was low spending, et cetera. And so those numbers last year, the earnings numbers, were being compared to, essentially a debt economy. The earnings this year now, conversely, are being compared to last year, which were really high because they were being compared to the lockdown. And so you got some still tough comps ahead. I just said that most of the growth this quarter was driven by energy, and like I hinted at earlier in our conversation, even those earnings are going to come off because oil is, $75 or $80 a barrel now, as opposed to where it was earlier in this year. We're in 2021, above $100 a barrel. So, those earnings, that positive growth, that 3% earnings growth that I mentioned, which was buoyed by energy, isn't going to have energy to buoy it anymore. And yeah, I think you're going to see a negative earnings print. You're going to see negative earnings growth in the S&P for the first time in a couple of years, and that's going to get priced into the stock market, which I can continue to believe is in a bear market and a downtrend. I haven't seen anything that reverses that in my mind.
Well, let's talk about that idea a little bit more, because it has been a bear market that a lot of traditional investors, especially maybe some of the younger investors on Wall Street and Bay Street, haven't seen. We've only seen flash crashes in the past, Nick, like when you think about the 2008, 2009 great financial crisis, it was really kind of an anomaly. Some would argue that some of those problems have not been fixed yet, but it was really a V-shaped down and V-shaped right back up. And then we had the pandemic crash in March of 2020, but it was a very quick recovery. And I don't know that those really qualify as traditional bear markets. Yeah, they had a 20% correction, but they shot right back up. Now we're seeing a much more orderly decline. And every time we see a little rally, we see a lot of financial media run with, hey, the bull market's back on, and the buy the dip mentality is still there. Do you think that still needs to be ground out of investors for a little while longer for this bear market to kind of play its way through?
Absolutely. Look, last time we spoke, I mentioned, you know, Tesla and how it was down, I think, 30% in the month prior to when we spoke last time. And since then, it's come down even further. You know, there's significant market cap there, what I would call one of the leading bubble stocks. And we've seen a lot of high market caps come out of the previous market darlings, specifically the tech stocks like the FANGs, right? I think if you look at those companies, you know, the Facebooks, the Apples, the Amazons, Netflixes, et cetera, you know, combined, if you throw Microsoft in there, they've lost over, I think, $3 trillion in market cap over the past year. And they're all still valued relatively high when you look across the entire market. So there's more that can come out of that. And, you know, it's I'm glad you mentioned market psychology because, you know, if you think of like Pavlo and his dogs, for example, you just spoke about how not many people have seen this environment, certainly not a sustained bear market, and then certainly not a Fed that has been content to continue tightening. It's been easy money policy for, frankly, a decade or a decade and a half. And I haven't seen that psychology reverse where you get true capitulation and no one wants to come in there and buy. I saw people want to come in and buy the June, July, August rally we saw. And I was saying that it's going to be a continued bear market. And sure enough, like you say, it sold back off. But now we're sort of in the middle of another rally that began in October. But even the steam is starting to come out of that. And then the one thing we haven't mentioned is the crypto market, which has been an absolute implosion, you know, on par with sort of the NASDAQ tech crash of 99, 2000, 2001. You know, that's sucking a lot of capital out of the market. A lot of people are learning investment lessons. And still, you know, I follow some people in that space and I talk to some guys who speculate there. And, you know, they're still content to come back in and buy. You know, they're saying, you know, Solana's a good value here. Or, you know, I think Avalanche can't get much cheaper. And I'm thinking to myself, man, they still haven't learned, right? Like you were saying, they're still willing to come back in there and buy the dip. And that's not indicative of a true market bottom, even to some extent in, you know, the tech stocks, if you want to talk about anecdotal indicators, like, you know, people talk about the shoeshine boy. You know, my barber was asking me the other week if I bought, you know, some Meta after the crash. And I was telling him, you know, no, man, I think that there's still more downside ahead. And so I think there's still more air to be let out of a bubble that went on for, you know, some 12 or 14 years after 2008. And there's going to be more true pain and capitulation ahead. And the other thing I would say is, you know, there's a wealth effect that's shrinking. Earlier, I mentioned how fast, you know, home prices were going down. That's the main source of wealth for most Americans. And if you're unable to refinance because either interest rates are too high or the value of your home has shrunk and commensurately with, you know, no more stimulus checks being handed out and all the previous stimulus and Paycheck Protection Plan money being spent by the business owner class, you know, that makes for an environment where, you know, the haves are not feeling as good and certainly not spending as much and not buying as much equity. I think I told you last time I was in 40% cash and that's about still where I'm sitting. And so, no, I think you get a true market bottom in the months and quarters ahead. And I haven't seen the true fear yet.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. And I think when your barber shifts next to not wanting to be in the markets at all and deciding he's done with the stock market, then we may be closer to a bottom because we need to see that, like you say, capitulatory event. I want to focus real quick on what you were talking about with the crypto crash. A lot of the problems we've seen really over the last couple of years, but especially in 2022, have been exchange-related problems. So not so much the actual individual cryptos as much as it is these third-party organizations that investors put their money in, and then something happens where their money gets frozen or they can't get their funds withdrawn, or there's just all out fraud in some cases. So that has damaged the crypto sector to some degree, but there are still a lot of enthusiastic participants. We have heard, Nick, for years, I know you follow the precious metals and crypto in tandem, that the shine from gold was being stolen by the crypto markets and that a lot of money had left the precious metal sector, whether it be for the safe haven part of it, for the Bitcoin side of it and leaving gold, or for the speculative side of it, like many of the altcoins and leaving the mining stocks. We heard that if there was ever a crypto crash, that money would come back into the precious metal space. But I don't know that we've really seen that. What's your take on that debate that's still out there in the marketplace?
I think you're going to. Yeah, I've got a smart line I've been saying for a couple of years, and that's that crypto soldiers are in training for the gold army. So, you know, I truly believe that some certainly speculative money was taken away from what would have traditionally gone into gold equities, specifically the juniors over the past couple of years. And it was funny because it was for the reasons that, you know, people traditionally bought gold and gold stocks, you know, independence from the monetary system, a hedge to inflation and recession, et cetera. Those were sort of the same reasons that people were pouring money into cryptos and altcoins. And what we've seen certainly over the past year is that in a high inflation environment with 40-year high inflation, you've got Bitcoin down something like, you know, 65-70% from the highs it was making a year or two ago. And you couple that with all the collapses in the exchanges we've seen and the value that's been eradicated from once high flying coins, even some of the big ones, like I mentioned, Solana, Avalanche, Ethereum, Bitcoin, that people are starting to be a bit more afraid. And I think some of that money is going to go into the gold space over the long term. One, because the investment philosophy is the same as I just outlined, you know, decentralization, autonomy, and the traditional inflation hedge. And also because these were sort of momentum chasers or swing traders or however you want to define that, sort of like the Reddit army, right? They go with what's hot. And I do see a scenario over the next year where gold comes back into favor, and there's been such underinvestment, and it's in the gold sectors and precious metal sectors been so underweight that a little bit of capital coming into it, as we know, you know, can make it go up significant amounts in percentage terms in a short amount of time. And that's, you know, what these crypto traders like. That's what these younger traders, these new retail traders, this Robinhood crowd has come to gravitate to. And so I think you'll see them gravitate to the precious metals equities for that reason.
Well, let me play the other side of it and bring up one of the counterpoints that a couple of people have made on our show. And that is that some of this money, whether it was the growth tech stocks or the meme stocks or the cryptos, that kind of did a U-turn and parabolically ran up and then parabolically ran down, has sent money to money heaven, and that capital is no longer there to reinvest. And so that a lot of people that are expecting rotation of funds are kidding themselves because the funds have been evaporated. Do you think that's a concern?
I mean, well, the money's got to go somewhere. I mean, I understand that the concept of money heaven, but you know, there's someone on the other side of that trade, right? So the money still exists in the market in some capacity. For the people that have been completely eradicated, you know, of course they're once bitten, twice shy, and then they might not have enough to invest. But like I say, I still talk to people, you know, who are buying and are holding coins. I think that they begin to liquidate them. We've seen some, you know, money coming out of exchanges in the light of the FTX collapse over the past couple of weeks, you know, people liquidating their holdings and taking them into alternative forms of storage. So I think there's still people out there that have capital in the crypto space and otherwise that haven't been completely wiped out, that are going to, you know, going back to that market psychology, are going to start to realize that, you know, there's other places to be and that crypto is not necessarily where it's at.
Well, Nick, just as we wrap up, I want to sew some of these threads together. And we've talked a lot about the recession that's still midway and still maybe has two more quarters. You talked about the weakness in the housing market and the wealth effect. So whether that's how people feel about their retirement fund or how they feel about the value of their house, if rates stay as high as they are, that's probably still going to hurt the housing sector. We've got muted growth. We've got higher energy prices, although they have come off some. When you look into next year, into 2023, do you see any sectors emerging as new leadership? Do you see anything maybe out there mid-year where there's some light at the end of the tunnel for investors, or is it going to be a pretty rough slog again like 2022?
You know, I see some traditional recessionary hedges starting to do their thing. I like the staples, the consumer staples as a sector of the S&P. You know, it's done okay in the past couple of months, and I have some holdings there, whether they're tobacco stocks or snack food stocks, and I continue to hold those and accumulate those. So that's one. I'm starting to look more at utilities. I mentioned the long end of the curve, the 10-year you know, having a bit more pause and that allowing gold to get to go higher. You know, that also allows utilities to go higher because they're a rate dependent sector and also a traditional inflation hedge. So some of these larger utilities that have a renewable component, especially, that are going to be beneficiaries of the infrastructure bill that passed and the inflation reduction bill that passed, would be two sectors I would be looking at as it relates to the S&P. And then on the metals or the natural resources side of things, I think I was clear on gold and how I'm getting increasingly bullish on that, have begun to allocate more capital into the royalty companies, especially sort of the mid-tier ones where there's some consolidation going on. And then same sectors I mentioned last time, you know, I think uranium is in a bull market. I think lithium is in a bull market. And I think that, you know, those sectors of the economy that deal in the energy transition, the electrification, the decarbonization, and where there's simply a structural supply deficit relative to the amount that's needed to either power reactors or build all the batteries that these automakers are announcing. You know, I think there continues to be upward price pressure on those metals and continue to hold and recommend equities in those spaces.
Well, Nick, it's always great getting your thoughts, man. You really cover a wide range of sectors and you have a good sense of the macro outlook. So we definitely appreciate you investing some time and energy here with us at the KE Report. Always looking forward to our next conversation. So we'll try to get something set up in a month or two as we kick off the new year. And again, if people like getting Nick's thoughts, definitely check out some of the links we put underneath this interview. So you can go over to Nick's site and check out both the Foundational Profits or the Hodge Family Office. Nick, I guess we'll talk to you again in the new year.
Chad, it was my pleasure. I appreciate it.